Blind Cool Tech, number 26, June 24th, 2005. I'm Larry Skutkan. We've got a great show for you today. We've got a long, about an hour and a half, second part of the tour of the APH production area with Roberta Williams. Before we get to that, though, we've got an email about a couple of questions about the Money Talks podcast, and they are good questions, so we'll go over them with the rest of you all. What is the price going to be? $49 for a CD version that you order by mail, and which includes the AT&T Natural Voices text-to-speech engine, or you will be able to purchase it for $39 if you download the program from APH.org and then call and get an unlocking code for it. Does it work equally as well using WindowEyes? Absolutely. This program was tested with JAWS and WindowEyes and with self-voicing. So all three of those work fine. And it also works with large print and with enlarging software. Does it do automatic check numbering? Yes, it does. When you get to the item field, you press the down arrow and it will give you the next check number. Does it match the check number when reconciling with the bank? No, it does not, actually. It only matches with the date and the amount. Can you print a report of category totals? Yes, you can. You can actually print category totals and payee and payer totals. And you can get other kinds of reports, too, with the restricted view. And any other built-in reports? Yes, the payee reports. Can you manually clear checks without importing the bank data? Yes, you can. You can just press Control Enter or pick Clear from the menu. Can you import from current Quicken files when setting up the program? Yes, Money Talks uses the QIF format to import your files. It'll take any QIF file. And secondly, we had a comment on the user line.
Hey, Larry, this is Don Barrett. I just want to thank you for doing such a superb job with your podcast, and think Blind Cool Tech is pretty cool and pretty techy, and it's just filling the bill for a lot of people. It's just very useful for everyone, and it's a lot of great information. Your two on Money Talks were really valuable, and I think we'll both meet different audiences, and you really are, you know, honing these and getting them the right information for the right people. So keep up the great work, and I just wanted to say thanks, and we're going to keep listening, and I hope you keep doing two or three a day if that's what you're up to. It's fine with me, just the more the merrier, and it's all good information. You take care, bud. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, thank you for the compliment, Don, and the feedback. We appreciate any feedback that you may have. We want to hone these shows for you. I don't know that we'll be doing two or three a day continually, but the one we have for you today is three times as long as normal. So grab a cup of coffee, enjoy yourself, and take it away, Roberta.
We talked about tactile graphics, I think, and how we did tactile graphics. Well, of course, if we're going to make a book, we need to put Braille in it too, not just tactile pictures usually. So if we're going to make translate something like, say, Reader's Digest magazine or textbook for students, either one, you have to take our regular English words and change them to English Braille. And the people that deal with that task are our transcriptionists, who are usually certified. The National Library Service has a certification program, and in order for people to translate Braille properly, they need to be certified. Many of the people in our transcription department have worked here for many years, and they may have certain specialties. Some will simply translate literary Braille, but others may know Nemeth code and other types of Braille. When we get ready to translate the Braille, we can get the regular English into a computer one of several ways. We can could type it in, of course, on a keyboard, but that's not done so much. Generally, it's going to be scanned in. If it's a textbook, for instance, they can scan it in, or if possible, they'll get an electronic file from a publisher. But whatever you do, what you want to do is take your regular English and put it into the computer so that you can then use Duxbury software to help you change it to Braille. Of course, the software program doesn't change it and translate it properly all by itself, and that's why you need the expert assistance of the transcriptionist. So once it's translated, changed to English Braille, it's saved to a computer disk, and then they can use that disk to do other things. The first thing they are likely to do after it's translated is to make a single paper copy from a Braille embosser that's been driven by this computer disk, and then take it over to our proofreaders to make sure it's correct. And then later they can make multiple copies, but we would much rather make the corrections while it's still on the computer disk form. So, the room that we're standing in front of is the room where the transcriptionists are. Let's go into the proofreading room.
Okay. I guess we should point out, too, that at some point, this new HIMAS legislation will make it a lot easier for publishers like APH to get higher quality files for our transcribers to work with.
Absolutely. That's not here quite yet, but that is in the offing, and it will make it a lot easier.
So we're walking into a carpeted room off the main plant.
That has several smaller rooms in it, and within the smaller rooms, teams of people proofread the translated Braille. They work in teams. Usually always one of the people has the original of whatever the project is. And that original, the person that does that is called a copy holder. The second person in the room is the actual proofreader, who has these sheets that were printed off the computer disk and will read out loud the Braille translation. Sorry, folks, we're disturbing. We're doing an audio tour. Larry's doing a podcast. So we're doing the audio tour of our tour.
Can we listen to y'all?
Can we come in and listen a little bit? You want to pick it up on the microphone?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Great.
Here are
your stars.
The
proof.
I don't want to hear it.
Oh, he won't let you see the. He's got it on a computer URL, and he won't tell you the URL, and then you won't be able to hear it.
We'll just tell Gary.
You want me to take the microphone off and put it closer to her?
Can
they pick it up?
Yeah.
Okay.
63 into the SAP 3. Paragraph kept concerning the seasons. Kept father observes. Apostrophe. Is very nearly the same as with the seasons of men's lives, period. Kept the baby not only crawls and creeps, comma, but walks a step or two, dash, and falls, dash, and then, apostrophe, 'tis many weeks or months before the true achievement, period. Kept the aging granddad sinks so low the family thinks him gone, period. Kept then is the oldster up and about, comma, springy and bright as you please, period. No, spry and bright as you please, period. Kept at this time is his time well run, period.
So you do all the caps and periods,
yes,
and all the punctuation.
To do the punctuation, everything.
And you
do it so quickly.
Yeah, it's
because
very
your fingers.
Flowing.
She's reading, of course, Braille with her fingers, and as quickly as she's speaking, her fingers are flying across the page. So if a mistake is found, what will you do then?
She writes it down.
All right.
I'll tell her the line number, and she'll write the mistake down.
Okay, and then we'll take it, I guess, and correct it on the computer disk,
mm-hmm,
and then maybe do a second proofing.
This is the second one.
But if it were the first one, and then we would do it again to make sure it's all correct before we make those multiple copies.
And it'll go back.
So you read the entire book twice, the first proofing?
No, whoever reads it first, somebody else will get it for a second reading.
Okay. And what book is it you're reading today?
This is called A Gathering of Days.
So I guess it's a novel.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, other days you might be doing, what, a textbook or a test or...
Yeah, it just depends. Yesterday we did this thing about card tricks.
Okay.
Oh, that sounds like some interesting reading.
Okay, well, thanks.
Would you ladies like to introduce yourselves?
Nope.
Okay.
In a word.
I'm Darlene Jones and she's Patty Hull.
But Darlene would be happy to
Darlene's a star on that show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patty, Darlene.
That's funny.
So I didn't realize that they actually proofread
an entire book twice.
Well, I guess it depends on, I suppose conceivably they wouldn't find, they find no mistakes to begin with. Maybe you wouldn't.
Yeah.
But I doubt that ever, that rarely happens. But maybe, you never know. Once the information has been translated and it's all correct, it's on a computer disk, and then they can use the disk to drive other machines. They may simply make, if it's a small number, a small quantity, like a textbook, they might only need 10 copies. And if that's the case, then they'll use a Braille embosser and emboss the entire book that way. But if it's something like Reader's Digest that we do change into Braille, they're going to put the Braille information on a metal plate. The plates we talked about earlier that are used with tactile graphics are also used for Braille. The plate itself is probably about 9 inches by about 15 inches, and it is has a front and a back leaf to it, so that when you put it on a printing press and spread the plate apart, you can insert a piece of paper between the leaves of the plate. The pressure will then emboss the front and back of the sheet at the same time. The machine we're standing in front of right now is called the PED machine, the plate embossing device machine. And the job of the PED is to take that computer disk information, the Braille, and stamp it onto the metal plate. So the plate, the size I described to you, takes about 40 seconds to get the Braille on it, because it stamps out whole rows of Braille at one time, not individual characters. Then they will take the front of the plate out, turn it over, and do the back, so you'd have an interpoint plate. So you have Braille on the front and back of the paper page. Then after the information isn't on the metal plate, and you've decided you're going to make a few hundred or a few thousand copies, you can put it on a printing press that we'll see a little bit later. Right now we're going to walk to the area where they would make the book from computer disk without making the metal plate. We'll go see the Braillos.
So Braillos, the name of the embosser?
Yes. They have, yes they are, they have a couple of different kinds. Can we hear me okay still?
Uh-huh.
Okay. The Braillo 200, the older model, uses fan fold paper. And we're standing in front of one right now. When you emboss on fan fold paper, you're generally going to make one page at a time. Then you'll take out the pages and pull the edges off, you know, they call that bursting, and then tear them apart. And what that means, though, is you then have a stack of pages, of page one, another stack of page two, another stack of page three, and at some point you will then collate the pages to put the book together. And you do that by hand here at the printing house, because the machine would mash the dots. On the other hand, we have a second Braillo embosser that uses a large roll of paper instead of fan fold paper. And it goes more quickly. The roll of paper is about 3.5 feet in diameter, and it's attached to the Braille embosser. And the way they set this one up is the entire book in sequence is put onto the computer disk. So that as the pages come out the front end of the embosser, the book is already collated. They use this for textbooks and other books that are small quantities. So when the person who is putting the book together picks up that group of pages, they're all together, and all they have to do is put the book cover on it. So we have different kinds of embossers for different processes.
Is there a machine that cuts the individual pages out of the roll after it comes out of the
embosser? Yeah, it's at the very front end of the embosser. It's simply being pulled through, kind of like tape coming out of an adding machine. As it comes out the back end, the knife cuts it immediately, and you get a stack of pages that are standing up vertically, actually, rather than laying down. And you just pick up that group of pages and take them over and bind them.
Now, these embossers are how big?
Well, the paper roll, as I said, is about 3.5 inches in diameter, 3.5 feet in diameter. And it's attached to the embosser. The embosser itself probably stands close to 4 feet high and maybe 3 feet wide. And the roll of paper, the Braille paper coming out of it, I said, is 3.5 feet in diameter, and it's about 16 inches wide. Now, there's also a computer attached to each one of these because that's the computer disk that's driving the information on the machine. You can actually hear it making a kind of a little very quick sound.
Yeah.
Like it's like something is jumping up and down on something. Of course, those are the dots being embossed, but you can see how quickly it's going.
Sure is. That'll sound like floating.
Now, there are three of these large embossers that use the big roll of paper in this area, and there's one that uses that manifold paper. I'm going to stop right here and talk about another way of getting the braille on paper. We've got the, you can hear a swinging sound in the background because we have a kind of printing press called a clamshell press. The clamshell press, which is, three feet high by about 5 or 6 feet wide and maybe another 5 feet deep, has two plates on it. And remember the metal plates we described that we put the braille information on. You take those plates, put half of those plates on half of the bed of the press, and then the other plate on the second half, and the press opens and closes like a clamshell, hence the term clamshell press. And every time you hear that swinging sound, a person has by hand picked up a piece of pre-cut paper and put it between the plates on the press. So this is a press where you pick the paper up and take it out by hand.
Sounds dangerous.
Well, it is, except these people are very careful. They practiced a long time, and there's a safety bar on the machine. As the press closes, a bar at the very front of it kind of pops up, and it would push your hand out of the way. So I don't think we have many accidents. Besides, all our people are very skilled, so of course we wouldn't have accidents anyway. But it's also true you can control the speed of that press. So if you were just learning, just getting started on something, it could go more slowly. But you hear how quickly it's going now. Actually, I think there are two presses right now running at the same time. It's a little hard to tell. But the swinging sound is the sound of the clamshell press. Okay, we have to go back this way. Making a new turn and going out to another side of the room. The room we're in is quite large. The printing, this part of the room perhaps has ceilings maybe 20 feet high. And it's like a big warehouse. In different parts of the room, different processes are going on. So when we went from the area right now, the presses, and go to the bookbinding area or other presses, we're all in the same room. It's just that the machinery is arranged in different ways. Let's go down and see if one of the other presses is running and see the collating line, and then we'll come back to the making of the book covers. As we turn the corner here, we see additional clamshell presses. And when I say corner, really, there are yellow lines on the floor, so there's no true corner. They've just got the lines here to describe the path of the tour. I can hear more clamshell presses in front of us. Off to the side, to the left, there are two other kinds of presses that are not running today. The clamshells make excellent quality braille, and they're good if you're making kind of a medium number of pages, a few hundred perhaps. But if you wanted to make... Okay. Of the clamshells? Okay. Did you want to take a picture of it?
Yeah,
sure. Well, actually, that way you've got the Heidelberg.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
You got to get, we have to move ourselves to the clam. You can see, it's hard to see. Actually, right here we can see. If you sort of aim like right there, you see a woman in front of it with her back is to us.
Okay.
And the clamshell's now starting up, so you got that. Okay. All right. Okay. So we were talking about other kinds of presses. The clamshells, because they're hand-fed presses and give excellent quality braille, are good for, say, a certain number of embossings. But if you wanted to make 2,000 copies of something, like the tax forms that we do sometimes, or even Reader's Digest, you don't want to put those pages in by hand. So we have other presses available. For pamphlets and magazines, we have a press called a rotary press. A rotary press looks like an old-fashioned wringer washing machine with two rollers, one above the other. The press itself is perhaps about 4.5 feet high, and then it uses a large roll of paper, kind of like Brailleau's. It's about 3.5 feet in diameter, and the end of the paper is pulled through the rollers. As the paper comes out the next end, it's cut into the size they need for the magazine or pamphlet. And in the case of the rotary presses, they will hand collate the pages. Because again, they set it up so you've got plates on this. And so they'll have to change plates every time they change a page. So in front of the presses, there is a line for collating. We can stop and look at that. Not that there's anyone collating right now. But the collating line has two shelves on it. The top shelves are perhaps 4.5 feet high. The lower shelf is about waist high, perhaps about 3.5 feet or 3 feet. And the way it works is a stack of pages is put onto the top shelf. Let's say all page one, then next to it all page two, and so on, till you get all the pages stacked up in order. The operators, or the people that work with this, will stand in front of that top shelf and have a tray on the lower shelf. They'll pick up a group of the pages in sequence and put it onto the tray. Maybe the first one will pick up page 1 through 5. Then that person will slide the tray down to a second person who will put up the next group of pages, and then the next person, until they get all of the book put together. And then it goes down the line, and since this is a magazine or a pamphlet, they'll simply put a paper cover on it. It goes around a corner, they put staples in it to hold the pages together, and then there's a machine that folds it, since it's usually going to be double pages wide, and then by hand they'll put it usually into cardboard boxes, or they might shrink wrap it. It depends on the size of the thing and what it is, but all that's done in the area in front of us. So the two kinds of presses we've talked about so far are we have the clamshell press and the rotary press, and of course we have the Braille embosser that's done all with the computer-driven process. We have a third kind of press that's in another part of the building called the Heidelberg press. The Heidelberg is a really big press, and it's very good at making excellent quality Braille and automatically putting the paper through. The Heidelberg will be perhaps 5 feet high and 6 feet long and maybe 5 feet wide. It will have one bed where you can put these metal plates on it, and then a stack of paper perhaps 18 inches high, which will be automatically fed into the press. The bed of the press will close and emboss the pages. So if I wanted to do 10,000 copies or more of something like, say, the alphabet cards we make or the art calendar we emboss, then I would likely choose the Heidelberg. So we have different presses, different processes, depending upon the quantity and the type of thing we're embossing. And, of course, Heidelberg isn't running either. Heidelberg out here never runs, apparently. They haven't got it working yet. Yeah, the one in here works sometimes. It always works, but it's not running either. You know that, Larry, right? That there's a Heidelberg in the large print?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, they've got a new Heidelberg that's sitting out here in the Braille area that I'm told they're going to have going eventually, but it's been here for several weeks, and apparently they can't get it to work right. Because it had to be, it's a regular printing press.
Yeah.
It had to be modified for what we do. And I guess, I was saying to Arthur today, do they know when it's going to get going? And he said no. On the tour, we cannot see the rotary press, so we just have to describe it. It poked it over in the corner. There was a time when it was out further, and you could hear it kind of, you might remember, it made kind of a whacking sound as it cut the paper, as it came out the front end. But none of this end down here is actually running today anyway. We're just standing again in front of that collating line. Now, did you want to do just what we see on the regular tour, or did you want to go further? I mean, on the regular tour, we really do the studio in Braille,
and that's it in the plant. We don't go into large print. We don't go into educational aids.
Oh, I'd love to do those if you have
okay.
time.
Okay, well, we can. But I'm just going to say, so the audio people will get more than the general public gets.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we can, well, let's go. So to keep this in secret, of course, you don't have to keep it. I was going to say we could go to bookbinding,
okay.
which we didn't go to at first, but it's up here in the middle of the room. We talked about putting the covers on the magazines and pamphlets, but the hardcover books done on the clamshells are put together up here. We're walking back to about the middle of this large room that we're in, and we're in the area where they create the covers for the Braille books. We make those by hand, and we start off with very heavy cardboard, perhaps an eighth or a little bit more, an eighth of an inch, a little bit more in thickness. And we use two pieces of that, about 16 inches square, and then we will glue to it an outer cover, which could be plain color like maroon or black, or it could be a bright color and be exactly like, if it's a textbook, like the cover that the standard textbook, the print textbook has. There in front of us is a station where Linda is hand creating these covers. And she just took the outer cover of a book and put it through a roller. The roller has glue on it, so when she put that cover through there, she got glue on it. Now she's taking three pieces of cardboard. She's got one on for the front of the book, one for the back, and the middle piece, a thin piece of cardboard, maybe an inch and a half, is for the spine of the book. The outer cover that she's using is perhaps an inch wider all around than the cardboard. So what she's doing now is bending over that edge, gluing it, so that the outer cover is now glued to the cardboard all together. And then next, what she's going to be doing is taking a plain white piece of paper, like a liner, and she's going to put glue on that. Before she does that, she actually takes a black piece of cloth to use as a bookmark that's bound into every one of the Braille books. So she put the bookmark in, then she took the white liner, and she reinforces the center where the spine of the book is with a second smaller piece of paper. She's got glue on that. Then she's finished when she puts it through another roller that squashes those layers together. Then in the middle of the room, someone else will punch holes and put metal rings into the Braille pages. And the metal rings will usually be used to hold the pages in the books, in the book covers. So while we were standing here talking, she finished one. Now she's on her next one. So it goes rather quickly, even though it's hand done.
Point out there's a strong smell of glue right here.
This is true, because that roller has a lot of glue. Linda, we're doing, he's making a podcast, so we're doing an audio tour.
Don't be so excited.
Yes, who's really enthusiastic about that? Huh? No, he's just going to send it out to the world. You know what podcasting on iPods and listening to it by way of computer? So you can listen to it on computer.
An audio tour.
So, I guess, can Linda listen to it at home?
Sure.
Yeah, if we give you the URL, you can listen to it at home. You want to say anything to the people that read the Braille books? See, that's who's going to listen to it, our customers. No? Linda doesn't want to say anything. She's just keeping working.
I have to think about what I have to say. I can't just talk.
How long have you been here, Linda?
Oh, 41 years.
Wow. How many books would you say you've done?
I can't even count. It's probably millions and millions.
What about in a day? How many?
Oh, a day. Just myself. Probably about 250.
Is that right? Wow.
You know, it used to be
Oh.
Seven
people. Right.
Yeah. Well, let's... 7 people and put out 1,000. Sometimes more.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. But now they just cut it down to one. Here Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that is something to mention. Whenever you visit the printing house, you may see slightly different things happening depending upon what job really needs to be done right now. I mean, maybe you need a lot of book to be done. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You might have a couple of people working on it at the time, right?
Yeah.
And now we've got one today. But it could be, I suppose.
And next week, she probably could tell me maybe coming out.
Uh-huh.
I have grounds. But right now, you know, I'm just taking an attic.
Right.
That's
very
beneficial. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Landa.
All right.
Okay. So let's go down and go to educational aides, and we can come out through large print. And if I have a tour, we may not be able to finish the studio today. Because it's about 20 till 2. No, we have tours that just don't all go into the factory.
I was thinking you didn't do tours on Friday.
Well, I always put a tour guide because, by golly, somebody somehow thinks there's a tour.
Yeah.
And I don't want people to turn up and not have anything. So what we do is we do the products and we do the museum.
Okay.
You know, even going, you can go through the museum on your own, but it's a little more meaningful sometimes if somebody kind of talks you through it and someone has explained more about the products and why we're here. So there's always a tour guide on duty,
okay,
even on the Fridays that's off.
Okay.
Well, we don't actually advertise that anywhere. It's just that they turn up. So yeah, I don't want to encourage people.
Okay.
Don't want to. Yeah, especially, you know, the bus tours. We absolutely won't do. A lot of bus tours would like to come on Friday, but they change the Friday off sometimes, so you can't be sure.
Yeah.
Except that day, you could be sure.
Yeah.
But even then, sometimes they're sort of winding down. The area. I guess it makes sense we need to stay in sequence to go back here first.
Okay.
We'll go into educational aides. Educational aides is a term that we give to a variety of things. In many cases, they might be like tactile maps and globes, or they might be certain kinds of books. There's a series of books called On the Way to Literacy, for instance, that have tactile pictures that are done with a process called vacuum forming. Or it might be a game like Web Chase, or it could be a kit like The Sense of Science. But in any case, what they're usually doing here in the educational aids area is using a process called vacuum forming. We're now standing in front of the vacuum form machine, and you hear it making a whooshing sound. And when it makes that whooshing sound, it's making an impression. I'll stop and wait until I stop doing that. The way the thing starts is that in our design shop, one of our designers, Tom Polk, will create a mold, a master. And it could be made of fiberglass or it could be made of metal. It can be made of different things. The mold is put on the bottom of this vacuum form on the flat surface. Then they take a thin piece of plastic and put it on top of the mold. Then a vacuum sucks the plastic so it goes to the mold, and they pass a heat source over it, and the heat melts the plastic enough that the plastic being sucked against the mold takes the shape of whatever is on the mold. In this case, he is making one of the geography. Is this geography? What is this? World geography? Yeah, I see the continents. So is this the atlas? Might be. I mean, it's like an atlas-like but he starts off with a thin piece of plastic, almost as thin as paper. Then he puts it on the mold, and it only takes a few seconds for the paper to get shaped, or the plastic to get into the shape of whatever he's molding. They can mold thicker plastic here, and they can use colors. He's using a white plastic, but we have some books that would have color. And if they did that, they would have taken the plastic upstairs to the silkscreen shop that we have and put the color on it and then brought it down and formed the shape with the color already there.
Wow, I bet that's tough to get that all registered properly.
Well, they do. They have to, silkscreen people have to match. Now, there's a second vacuum form back here, and they are forming clear plastic. The clear plastic has, looks like little modules. This must go in one of our kits. But he's using a mold. So we've got two machines that are doing thermoforming. These machines are actually quite huge. One of these, the length of one is perhaps 10 feet long and maybe 6 feet wide. And then it's tall, it's about 5 feet tall, but over it all is a hood because you have to get the fumes kind of sucked up out of the ventilating system. So the thing goes all the way up to the ceiling. So here you've got two vacuum form machines, one in front of the other. I know there's another one that can do even heavier plastic. If you've ever seen one of our light boxes that's made out of kind of a thick yellow plastic, or one of the kits that's made out of plastic, maybe a quarter of an inch thick, we can form plastic that heavy as well with our mold. So let's turn, go the other way. Now, the pages you saw from the book that they were putting, I guess it's an atlas because it had maps on it. It's a large sheet of paper, and the paper is what, about 24 by 36 inches approximately, something like that. She's showing us.
It's about 20.
You can feel it if you like, Larry. We're doing an audio tour, so we've got this microphone, and he's recording it, and he's going to put it on computer. Now, the sheet that she's working with, though, is not a single page out of a giant book. Since it's about 36, not quite, about 30, 24 by 30, they're going to cut this into four pages when they put it in the book. So it's more effective to do, to use the thermoform. Yeah, here's something she's got punched apart. But the machine that she's using here is a cutting machine that will cut that big sheet into the smaller pages you see here, which is about 8.5 by 11, and would fit into like a standard notebook size.
This is basic science.
I did. I'm an expert now. That's some very good, crisp, clear graphics.
Now, the gentleman back there, when she was shouting, he's doing this on the vacuum.
Right.
And then I'm die-cutting them and getting them ready to be put into a binder.
Right.
Okay. And your name?
Loretta DeBoer.
I meant to bring the cookies with me, but
I think I know you from upstairs.
Yeah.
I always talk to you and your doggy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nice seeing you, Loretta.
As my granddaughter says, oh man.
Hey, BJ. We are doing a podcast of a tour of the educational aides and the whole area here. And since you're the supervisor here, do you want to tell the world anything special about, besides the fact that I owe you some cookies?
Larry owes me cookies. I've got the hardest working people at APH working for me.
I believe it.
I do.
We're busy back here.
I tell you.
That's why you get things
good,
done, right?
That's right. I can't do it. I need the current. I got it.
Well, excellent. This is BJ Reese.
He's recording it here. He's telling the world.
The world.
But don't worry, he can cut and paste. He can edit.
No, you can't tell me when you're recording.
He's recorded everything we said. There's a second machine over here they're using to stamp out something else. It must be another one of the kits. So back here in Educational Aids, they had several vacuum forms, a cutter, and a number of other machines going. Once the pages from something like that, tactile graphics, basic science, are finished, it becomes a part, and it's a number. Each part of one of our kits has its own number. We're standing in front of some bins right now, and they each have a code on them that will be input into a computer, because everything here at the printing house is kept track of by a large computer system. Unfinished goods, just the basic plastic sheets, are kept track of. You take some of those off the shelf and start making things out of them, they get a new number. And then when they're finished, they get put into bins, and each one has its own number, so that later when you want to put the different parts of that kit together, you go to the computer and you suck up all the numbers for that particular kit, and you bring them to the educational aids assembly area, which is next. So we were standing in front of some shelves with maybe 50 or so bins on them. Now, the next room we're in, this is the educational aids assembly area, where the kits and the other books made with vacuum forming will be assembled. Like the book we saw, which was Basic Science Tactile Graphics, those pages she had, when they're ready to actually put the book together, it will be done in the educational aids assembly area. So what we have in here, which is another large room, is two tables with several people sitting around it, and they seem to be, one of them's putting together a kit which has strings and various pieces of plastic, and another group is putting together one of the On the Way to Literacy books. Then they will package them in this room, since they're putting finishing touches on some of these educational aids in here. I've seen them do maps, for instance, and paint the rivers on. So sometimes they'll do a little finishing touch like that. Sometimes they'll only assemble them and put them together. But once they've done whatever they need to do by hand, they're packed into boxes. And then they'll be taken down to the shipping area and stored, again, computerized, so that somebody orders something, it can be pulled off the shelf as a finished product and shipped off to people. So, educational aids assembly area.
And
they do quite a bit. It's like finishing up touches that one needs. And it could be cutting something. I've seen them cut string to a certain size. A lot of people sometimes are looking at this, sometimes say, well, why don't you automate all that? Well, one of the reasons more parts of this are not automated is you're doing relatively small quantities. I mean, you may only be doing a few dozen of something at a time.
Many, many different products.
And many different products, but relatively small quantities of each one. So it's more cost effective and efficient to do a lot of it by hand, rather than trying to make some humongous machine that could do it all. We're going next into the large print area. And we're going through, we have turned the big room, and now there are doors into another room, which is actually half of this part of the building. And we can start right here. I'm seeing what they're doing down here and what would make sense in sequence. In this part, in large print, they take textbooks and some other projects that we need to do in larger print. They also will make things like paper with lines on it, lined paper or raised line paper. We have actually a Heidelberg press over here. The art calendar is made in this corner. Not doing it right now, but we make about 10,000 copies of that. And when I was in the Braille area, I mentioned that we have a Heidelberg in another room, and here we are standing in front of it. The Heidelberg press can have a stack of paper that's perhaps 16 or 20 inches high, and it can, the metal plates that you put on it are on a flat bed of the press, and it will pull the pages automatically into the press and emboss them. Now, they are doing a calendar that is a special calendar. I don't know if you know it, but our art calendar that we have with art images from artists who are blind or visually impaired can also be made as a special project calendar. I see that we're looking at one for the Georgia Academy for the Blind, and Microsoft once did one with us. In other words, if you would like a special edition of this calendar for your company or your group, you can ask us, for a fee, of course, to put your name at the top of the calendar. At the bottom, it still says APH Insights Art Calendar, but these are custom calendars. So they'll be put together here in large print. The other thing that will happen in large print, too, is that sometimes you'll be doing Braille and large print on the same page. So it has, like the alphabet cards we make, they will print with regular ink the black part of the alphabet card, and then they'll emboss on that Heidelberg press the Braille on top of it. Most of our large print for textbooks and other projects of that sort, however, are done with an enlargement process. It's a lot like Xeroxing, except the Xerox machine has taken a step toward the future. The machine we're standing in front of is called the iGen 3.
It's a brand new one for us, too.
It is. I understand.
There's only two in this part of the country.
Right. And I think last we heard 407 in the world. So the DocuTech is capable of very quickly taking pages and
having enlarged them can also do color. That's one of the issues in large print. A few years ago, when we took a textbook, changed it to large print for a student in school, even if there were color pictures in it, we had no way to make good, quick color pictures. So the interior pictures were black and white, and the cover was even black and white. So the first step we took toward making it more like the regular textbook was to make the covers color, and now we have the capability of very quickly making the interior pictures color as well. The iGen 3 is perhaps about 30 or 35 feet long, and it's perhaps 3-4 feet wide, and not much can actually ever be seen in it because it all happens inside of it. So you put something in that other end down there, comes through, and it comes out this end, by golly, but it does it very quickly. So it will mean that we can bring the large print textbooks and other projects of that type to people much faster.
We, just this week, we started doing our CD artwork.
Did you?
Ah.
Uh-huh. Well, it can do almost anything, we're told, huh? We might do the art calendar on it in future years. We're exploring that possibility. Now, once they have the pages run off, this back part of the room we're walking toward right now is where they make the covers for large print. So it's another where they're making the covers by hand. We saw them making the covers for the Braille books out in the other room, but here you've got large print covers, a little bit different size, still heavy cardboard, still using glue and gluing layers together. But this time we have to trim by hand, I see. I don't usually get to see them making the covers back here. Hi. She has to trim it so it will fold easier. Is that why you trim it? Why do you trim it? So it'll fold easier?
Yeah.
Okay. Because it's going to be larger than, say, the Braille book covers generally. This book looks like the covers, perhaps, so almost 16, 18 inches tall, and then it's going to be the front and back of the cover. So when they put the glue on it, and they have another one of those rolling, those machines with glue on it, and you roll the pages through it, and then they use heavy cardboard again. So they're making the covers for the large print books in this station, making them by hand. And once they've got them made over in the far corner, they will glue the pages that have been assembled and collated into the covers. So the next station here is where we see, this is kind of interesting because instead of a roller with glue on it, she's got a great big pot, like a paint bucket, full of melted glue, and a big paint brush that's perhaps an inch and a half in diameter. It's like a rounded paint brush, except she just dips it into the glue pot, and that's how she gets the glue on the cover, and then puts the pages of the book into it. It's kind of traditional bookbinding, actually.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, it doesn't smell as much as the other glue does.
No, it does.
Maybe it smells to you because, yeah.
You're used to it, huh?
But what she does, she has to do, remember the book covers themselves were made, and so inside part of the, there's a name for that page. The page that you glue, put the glue on, that the last page, the flashing? Okay, the fly sheet. Yes, the fly sheet. I knew there was a name in bookbinding. The fly sheet, which is like a plain page at the very back of the book that you're going to put glue on to make the pages stick to the cover. And that's what holds the pages in.
And what size font are we using in these large print books? Just 18 points?
I'm not sure what the minimum is now.
It's at least the
font. The font for the, do you know the size font for these?
And I guess it's different.
Can we tell?
Books.
We're looking at a. Right. The books themselves are 14 by 11. But we'll find someone that may know what the minimum, the standard for the font for the print inside. I can't remember that. Because it has changed. It's gotten larger. Okay. Thanks. So they're busily making large print books in this area. And we'll walk back toward the front of the building.
Oh, I'm glad you
I said that, I was turned around.
Well, Larry, you know
this. I should know this place.
Oh, I don't know. Because we started here with the iGen, but then the making of the covers is back there. Which, you know, it's like toward educational aid.
Yeah.
And now we're simply moving toward the front. Walking through here, we see maybe 5 stacks of racks that have various book covers on them that will later be taken down to that binding area, and they'll put the pages in them. Over here to my right, we have offset presses. You know, we talked about the printing house, but we really don't have that much traditional printing that's done. But if we're going to do really large quantities of something like the alphabet cards, or in this case, what they're running off is the paper that has just black lines on it, the lined paper that we make here. And they don't print any other color but black. But they run that off, and then if they're also going to raise it, they can take it over to the Heidelberg, like if they're doing the alphabet cards. So that's the sound you hear, is the sound of one of the offset presses. On the opposite side of the room, not running, we do have a laminating machine, because when we make the large print textbooks and we send it out there to children in schools, we want to keep the fingerprints from destroying the cover, so they laminate the color cover in the area over there to the other side. Then we're walking past stacks of calendar pages. Remember, if anything has Braille on it, it's going to be collated by hand in almost every case. So if the art calendar, if anybody gets that, you must understand that those pages got in order because we collated them by hand, and that would be done here in the large print area. Over in the far corner, over to my right, maybe about 30 feet away, are cutters, because you don't buy paper the size you want necessarily. So they might buy large sheets of paper, maybe 4 feet by 5 feet, and then it's just more cost effective to cut it down to the sheet they need for whatever they're going to put through the press or whatever project they're going to do. Now we walk kind of around in a circle, and we're going out 2 doors, going out the double doors here, and that brings us back to the area of the PED machine we mentioned earlier. The plate embossing device where they would be stamping out the metal plates and putting the Braille on it. And actually, it's now 2:00. I could call the front desk and see if there is a tour. And if there's not, we can go on. Let's find a phone. He didn't have the phone. Maybe there's a phone up here near the Coke machine. I think there's a phone. We can use your cell phone. Can we call the front desk with your cell phone?
No, I do it all the time.
See? Okay.
You want to talk to her?
Okay. Just ask her if there's a tour for Roberta.
Tour up there for Roberta? Oh, good. Okay. Well, I'm going to keep her there.
Oh, good.
Thanks.
Okay. No tour. Friday afternoon, no tour. Okay.
All right,
we'll go downstairs. What we usually do, we are going to walk downstairs to the studio area and have a look at that, see how we make the talking books.
Okay.
Let's turn here, go down these dock three, down the steps. Larry, can you feel that, whether they change the texture? Does that help you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like sandpaper.
Yeah. I mean, I can see it. I just didn't know if anybody could feel it, because I don't think I would pay attention.
What is it, kind of a bright yellow?
No, it's not. It's just black up there.
Oh,
they've got bright yellow strips on these steps, I guess. Well, these are filthy. So, but I think those were only to be textured up there.
We're down in the basement.
We're now in the basement. Remember, this is a huge building, 280,000 square feet of space.
Wow.
It has, depending upon what part you're in, it has maybe 3 or 4 floors, and it has 2 sub-basements. We're not going to go to all that. We're standing in the middle of the basement, And if we were to go all the way to the very end, which right now is to my left, we would be in the shipping department. Because once they get all those Braille books and large print books, remember, they'll issue a computer number. It'll be a finished product. It'll be taken down to the shipping area. And when orders come through, they'll take them off the shelves and send them out the back of the building. Depending upon how they're going to ship it, might go to the post office or UPS or whatever. We usually have two or three pickups a day. Coming forward from there, there's a place where we make slates and styluses. There's a little room for that. We do make those here, too. There is a room.
Any way we could see that?
Maybe.
It's too early to do that. It's gone yet.
We'll see.
It ain't time to go home.
It's not? It's almost time, Jerry. Not long. I don't know. We'll see if there's mostly not anybody in there, but we can see. I brought the gentleman from Thailand in there the other day. It's tiny, too.
You know what? He was the guy that was asking me about that.
Yeah, well, we took him in.
Whoops.
I can't get in the door.
It's locked down.
No, I just can't manipulate the door. You're on the tour all the time now. Here, let me close. It doesn't want to close by itself.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey there.
Larry.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Yeah, I've sat with him before in a smoke room.
Oh, yeah. We're doing an audio tour.
See, this on a microphone?
Okay.
And I was hoping you could explain how we make the slates here at APA. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Kathy Coddington.
And you've been here how long, Kathy?
I've been in here a little over 3 years now.
Yeah.
So,
Tell us about how you make these.
Well, I start back there on that machine. It comes like on a roll of metal. Mm-hmm. And you just cut out your size you need.
How wide is it? Is it a real wide roll of metal? Is it like...
I can show you.
Well, can we get back there?
Yeah.
It's such a narrow little teeny tiny place.
Well.
Squeeze.
With wonderful... huge, big machines, drill presses and such.
There's a lot to it. You've got a lot of machines and a lot of different...
You've got drill presses and all kinds of machines that cut metal. Oh, there it is. That's an interesting roll. I've never seen this.
Yeah, he wants to feel it.
You want to feel it? Since it's not running, Gary can feel it.
Oh, okay. So it's almost really the size of the slate.
Yeah. These are aluminum.
Yeah, these are for the aluminum slates.
Mm-hmm.
So there, and then there's the center of it. See, it's on a roll.
Yeah, I'll be darned. That's a large roll of aluminum.
So it's going to go on over to another part of the machine. But this one will cut it. Will this cut it the size we want it?
This does.
Oh, that one does. Okay.
Yeah. Now, do we make them out of other things than aluminum?
Yeah, we use nickel. Okay. And now we get plastic ones, too, but we don't make the plastic.
Oh, okay. And the nickel comes in a roll like that as
no,
well?
No, the nickel comes in like 5 foot long strips.
Okay.
It's already cut. It's not on the roll.
I see.
So then you put it in this machine here and you cut your size.
It cuts it to make it whatever length it's going to be?
Right.
Okay. Okay, so you got to... this kind of slate. That's one that's special, Larry.
That's nickel.
Yeah.
I'm joking about the fact it's sort of rounded and curved looking right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be put in a roll.
Oh, okay.
It's got to be straightened out. But you put the Braille on one cell at a time.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So there's four cells. You do one at a time. And then here you would be blanking your windows. That's done one at a time.
Well, I'll be. That's pretty labor intensive, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And we make the hinge there, too?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
We crimp the hinge.
I'll just
put it in a machine and crimp it.
Okay.
And then, you got to put the pin in there to hold the top and bottom together.
Yeah. And what is there, some kind of machine that stamps those Braille cells and that form into there?
You're talking about the Braille, the cells?
Uh-huh.
Yes, this machine.
It's the one that's in front of us. The one in front of us is about 5 feet high, perhaps so 3 feet deep, and maybe 2 feet wide. And it's got a huge motor on it with a metal casing around it, so we actually can't get very close or touch it. It's a very powerful machine.
But yeah, this is where I put my cells and for the windows, and then put the Braille on.
Uh-huh. So that machine will do all that.
Yeah.
It's going to cut the size of the metal you want and make the...
Maintenance guys just got to come here and set the machine up.
Uh-huh.
But you put your windows in first, and they're a little bit easier.
Okay.
Then this will be stuck together, and then where your windows go, your barrel goes on the other side. So.
And then they have to get... They're lined up exactly, I guess, because of how the hinge works, right? You have to be precise.
Yeah. If you mess up a bottom, you can't
make
none
braille.
Of it. Right. But we stamped the name on here. It says American Printing House.
You see the name stamped? Yeah, the name is stamped. So
American Printing House for the Blind's on there.
Okay.
How many? You don't make so many a day, do you? Because you're going
to
do...
It takes a while to work on it.
Because you're doing parts. You're going to do groups. I mean, you'll do all of one process first. Is that right? I mean, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I blank them all out and cut them all out and put them all together. And some we send out and get anodized.
Okay.
So
a slate might not be finished all in one day.
Oh, no. It'd probably take a month.
Okay. To go from one process to the other.
Yeah, you've got all these machines.
Yeah.
Well,
I said, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe a dozen machines in here?
And you run them all?
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes if you get tired of one machine, you can go switch to another one.
Yeah.
And you can come back because, this is really the slow part, putting the barrel on.
Uh-huh, yeah, since you have to do...
the windows, because you can't see. You just got to
feel. Yeah.
Well, we just put Larry to work doing that. He has to feel all the time anyway.
Good job. Thank you.
She's going in front of us. But she was working
over
here.
Are you familiar with the brown slates?
She's got a brown slate here.
Are you familiar with them? They got a frame.
So.
The frame?
They got a frame.
And what do you use these for?
They're just called brown slates.
I don't think I've ever seen one like that.
Really?
They got a frame, and they're a little bit, you just got to straighten the frame out, too.
Mm-hmm.
Showing my ignorance, but.
Well, we'll have to find out the history of those for you, Larry. I just assumed you knew all about
them. There must be a good reason for that. Maybe to hold the paper? No, you use these little.
Well, I haven't put my pins in yet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they haven't got their pins in yet.
Okay. That's called a what? Frame?
This is a brown slate.
Brown slate.
Brown slate, yeah.
Okay. How many different kinds of slates do we make?
We got large. Desk, small desk, brown slates, and a couple more.
You make plastic too, did you say?
No, you don't make the plastic. We just send them out.
Oh, okay.
It's ready to be have the pins in. I haven't got to that yet.
Okay.
Because I do work for BJ too. Educational aids. Yeah.
Is that what these other little metal things are over here? There's something for educational aids?
Yeah,
I was wondering what that had to do with the slate when we came in there.
Yeah.
It's a little... Are they metal or are they mirror? They're metal.
Yeah, it's... It goes on one of their games up there.
You know, we were just up in educational aids.
Was you?
So we saw vacuum forming up in educational aids, but what we're hearing is that some of the parts might be formed in metal here in this shop that often makes... Or usually make slates, right?
Yeah, they're waiting for these. I've got almost got them done.
Okay.
I've got their tumblers back here. And I do impressors.
Mm-hmm.
I do spines for the barrel department to put on their binders.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You make the impressors down here.
So this is really kind of a metalworking shop in a way, huh?
It's quite a bit of metal.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
That's okay.
Say bye, Jake.
No, he wants to see the garbage can. There's something smelly in the garbage can.
Jake, he's supposed to be a professional dog.
Well, he sniffed it very professional. How are you?
Okay. Now we're heading back to the front of the building.
Yes, we're going toward the front of the building. As we walk, we see more metal because she's working metal for specific products. But over to our left, there are rows and rows of copper pipe, aluminum pipe, it looks like, and even plastic. And the longest pipe parts are perhaps 30 or 35 feet long. And I think it's raw materials that they may use. They could use it in the repair of some of the, like I see a handle for water. So this isn't necessarily product materials, because at the printing house, our maintenance people may have to repair some of the lines for water or whatever.
Yeah.
They also might make some prototype machines out here. Over to the left again, probably about 30 feet away from us, there's another group of machines that work metal, like for turning, and looks more like drill presses and such. So they might make other kind of prototype pieces out here. Now, Larry, if we want to keep this in sequence, we need to walk down to the studio first, right? And then we walk back here. Okay? Yeah, this is duplication that we're at. But if you want to start at kind of the right sequence, we can go down to the studio first. We're just doing that. We want to make sure that people are not confused. That would never happen. I'm going to say, Of course, that's, you know, when we really do the tour, we do it in reverse. Just because we can't walk your general public person back and forth, back and forth. So in some ways, this is less confusing.
This is a much more extensive tour.
It is. This is true. Because there are some places that are really too small, like this slate manufacturing area, and too dangerous with all the big machinery to actually take people in. So.
Yeah. General tour doesn't get to know that to our right there is our computer information services area.
No, they generally do not, unless one of those people comes out the door we talk to. Well, I finger people when they walk through the hall sometimes. Hello, what are you doing? Okay, we'll start in.
Okay.
What we want to talk about now is how we make talking books. I'm sure most people are familiar with the term talking books. We make them as a job, a contract job, for the National Library Service's Talking Book Program. And making talking books, what that means for us is that we have a narrator. First, the National Library Service is the one that tells us the titles, so we don't decide what the titles are. They'll give us between 400 and 500 titles a year. And then one of our narrators is selected to read that book. That's the person whose voice you hear on the recording. And the narrator works with a second person called a monitor. We're standing in front of one of the studios, and we can see that there are two parts to the studio. The window and the room immediately in front of us is perhaps 6 feet deep. And then there's a second window and another room beyond that. In the first room, the monitor sits at a desk with a computer in front of them, and they work to record digitally with software called Studio Recorder, which was, of course, developed here at the printing house for use in our studios, but now it's sold as a product, so anyone can use this who wants a good quality recording program, particularly good for the human voice. So they record digitally, and the monitor is seated here. Other parts of the monitor's room, kind of interesting, the monitor will sit there and have the book that's being read open, can see the narrator, who is through the second window in the room beyond. The narrator will be reading the book out loud, and then the monitor is following. You never hear the monitor's voice, but the two are both following the book then. So if either the narrator or the monitor notices an error has been made, something misread, they will stop on the spot and make a correction. So they correct as they go, as much as possible. To help correct, sometimes there's a controversy about how a word should be pronounced. Within the monitor's room, aside from the computer and the bookshelf that's in there, there's a very large dictionary, perhaps about 6 or 7 inches thick, to look up words. Somebody isn't sure how a word's pronounced or thinks it should be pronounced differently, they'll look it up on the spot. We have 11 studios. And we have about 30 narrators all together. Let's go take a look at the second studio over here and see if anyone is actually recording. See if there's anybody in that studio. Why, yes, there is someone. We might be able to turn the speaker on. It's up here. In this studio, Mitzi Friedlander is down there and is waving at us. She's not actually recording yet, but they look as though they're ready to. The book seems to be called Night Animals.
She said something about it.
What'd she say? She's just turning her head. And she's making faces. That's true.
See, you don't even say your name.
I think they're at the start of a book. Is that right? Mm-hmm. We're doing an audio tour. Larry is recording us this whole thing.
Okay.
Okay, so they're just at the start. That's why they're pausing. Okay. So we may be able to hear her in just a minute. Going back? Oh, she does?
Well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm going to. Does she want to talk now or does
she want to
wait?
She wants to know if you're going back to your office.
Yes. Not right now. Not right now. Probably in another half hour.
She'll call you later.
All right. So what we were standing in front of one studio, and we're in front of a second studio. So on this side of the building, there are two studios side by side. Then if you meander around the corner and up the road a little bit, there'll be another group of studios. So they're not all right here together. We have these two studios that it's easy to look in. We have one studio. Now, we mentioned earlier that they're recording digitally. The studios were initially made, however, for reel-to-reel recording. So it was analog recording from the at first. And then we converted maybe a couple of years ago to this digital recording format. So the studios were initially not made for digital recording. We have one studio, however, that was, and it's kind of around the side. Interestingly, the old studios are much larger than the new one, which was designed for digital recording. The old ones were cut down to make them smaller, perhaps for the quality of the sound. She might be reading now. Let's see if we can turn on the speaker up here.
Okay. Yeah.
They're just at the beginning of a book, as I said.
This is interesting.
What? How the book
is listening to them, that dialogue.
Oh, no. Can we hear? You notice she read that over because perhaps it was read the wrong way first.
I hope we're catching that.
Okay.
Okay.
So you're not going to want to go from Hill to A
Lot. If we go in that room,
okay.
You want to hear them chatter? Maybe walking into the room would help. I don't know if we can still hear her, though. See, no, because I think he can hear. He's got on earphones, but we could hear him. See, we can hear her out there.
We have some difficult material today.
That's more interesting for the tour.
It was interesting for us to listen to you all's dialogue. I'm sorry.
It was interesting for this audio tour to hear your dialogue back and forth. It shows the complexity of our work.
Yeah.
Yes. But I guess we've got it all right now.
She said she'll be finishing
her
headlines.
I'm not waiting for her.
It's almost time. Yeah, Roberta says she's not really waiting.
We're just trying to get the chatter on the...
Just be a minute. Squeaking and speeding. They don't see the harvest mice scampering among the fallen branches.
You want to hear that? You can probably hear that. This is Mitzi Friedlander reading.
And goes back to eating a gopher.
I think the book is called Night Animals.
One more page. It goes back to eating a goat. It goes back to eating a goat. In the muddy water, a raccoon feels around for crayfish and snails.
You
said
opossum.
Oh, darn. Okay, I can either say opossum or possum. In the muddy...
Yeah, see that little thing is things. I've got to tell Johnny about that. It clicks itself off for no reason.
But a watchful barn owl does. So does. The sound of the owl startles an opossum munching berries. She and her babies duck into the underbrush. But cautiously, she waddles to the pond for a drink.
Okay,
that is so cute. I can't stand it. It's so cute.
Now, Mitzi, what the narrators do is they read for 2-hour sessions, and then some may take a break and then read a second 2-hour session.
Okay.
do have some people. Are you trying to get in? I'm sorry. We're in the way.
Hey, I thought that was you.
Hey, how you actually have to come all the way down here and take a tour? You don't know what we do down here?
He's putting it. He's going to do a podcast.
Yeah.
So we're trying to do audio description.
Well,
no, they can in fact, cut and paste. You're going to be a highlight. Let's introduce you.
You didn't know that, did you?
No, I didn't know that.
This is Richard Howenstein. Well, introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Richard Howenstein. Yeah. I'm a narrator. I'm tugging into your lapel, am I?
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a narrator. I've been doing this off and on for about, good heavens, 27 years. Yeah, and most recently for about 7. What else you want to know?
Well, I guess it's kind of interesting. You used to be a radio personality.
Yeah, right? I did that for a number of years. Sort of that was between times. I went from being a narrator to being an actor to being a radio person, and then back to being a narrator. And basically, I think I determined that folks don't mind listening to me as long as they don't have to look at me. So
you've got a radio face.
Yeah, I've got one of those faces of radio. Yeah. Well, I was glad to see you down here. I didn't, I was thinking, gee, he looks a lot like Larry Skutkan.
Well, that's a reason for that.
We're about the two tallest guys in this building. I think
that may be true, yeah. Well, among them, certainly, Steve Mullins is close.
How's the studio recorder doing for you?
Oh, man, I love that. That is.
We've got a new version up.
Richard. Have you, really?
Yeah.
Great.
Check it out on the website.
Great,
there.
I will, yeah. Because I use that thing probably 2-3 times a week at home.
Yeah.
And of course 5 times a week over here. But it's a very fine program. What kind of enhancements have you done?
We did some optimization to the wave view to make it a little snappier and added a few new commands on the tools menu.
Cool.
Well, now we're doing some work to add some other controller support because we were supporting that RE11 from Plextor, the external controller, and they quit making it. So
just, that happens to me all the time. As soon as I find a product I like, they stop making it.
That's the story.
Anyways, good to see you.
You too, Richard.
Let you folks get on with your tour here.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
We're walking down the corridor. The corridor we're in that has the two studios on one side is fairly narrow. It's only about 5 feet wide. On the opposite wall behind the studios, there are two points of interest. One is there are photographs of all the narrators, monitors, and the proofreaders that work here.
Well, that's the Hall of Fame, I guess.
Well, no, it's everybody. But what we're in front of right now is plaques that are like the American Foundation of the Blind, Alexander Scorby Narrator of the Year Award, which a number of our narrators have won, including Mitzi Friedlander, who's just standing here, has come out of her studio. We're doing an audio tour. See, Larry is recording this for a podcast.
Mitzi, keep quiet.
No, that's all right.
No,
I was just finishing this.
This is my idea. I have an idea.
She has an idea, yes.
Okay. Well, will it be recorded? We cut it out.
Well, he can cut it out.
Okay.
Do we have to? Because this is interesting when we get to hear the narrators offline.
It depends on what this idea is.
That's true. Can't wait to hear the idea. We were talking when we had lunch about some fete of some kind on the front lawn. And I thought about Johnny Zinninger and his family.
That's true.
They are just great.
They are. Well, that might be a thing. We were talking about it in relation to the last Friday, the Fat Friday, Frankfurt Avenue trolley, Larry.
Oh, excellent.
But
yeah.
Because if we just are open, they say, you're saying, are you going to be open?
Yeah.
There's nothing to draw people into us. But so you need something out on the lawn, and so that's what Mitzi's thinking of. That's a good idea. So we might tackle it in the fall.
Yeah.
When we have the art back, we can have the art in, because that's part of it. You're supposed to be looking at arts now. But we can then get them up to the museum. So, that's a great idea.
I thought it was. So I meant to call you, and here I see you. And Larry, it's good to see you.
You too,
this is, I forget.
Jake.
Yeah. I wanted to say Jack.
Well, Jake is just so laid back
Jack
there.
With his first owner.
Ah,
he was a reject, so
they renamed
him and
they
send him back.
That's our Sammy.
Whoops.
Our Sammy.
Jake, you have to move your feet. I bet if you keep coming, he'll.
Sorry, Jake. It went over a paw here.
He just had his feet all the way.
He's being run over.
Jake can tell. He's not on his.
You make him happy.
He's a good boy.
See, she made you get up, but then she petted you, so you get a reward.
Oh,
Well, he's even wagging nicely.
Oh, you really woke him up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he had to
see. I have a way to see.
Yeah, she does. Well, I have Sammy, and Sammy is really, I wouldn't trust him down here.
Is he a little wild?
Yes. He's okay, wonderful with people. And that's coffee down here. But it comes from the guide dog users of Oregon.
Oh,
okay. Could you give me a kiss? Let me get a kiss from Sammy.
Okay.
Thanks, Mitzi.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Hello. Hey.
Hey there. Hey.
Did you ever get a paper copy of the newspaper that you were in?
I did.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Because it was on the web, you know.
Yeah.
Okay,
and then they had one right up here. They got one
did
up here.
Yeah, oh, okay.
I got one home.
Okay, just want to make sure you had.
No,
I have. I have both the web copy and the paper.
Okay.
Great.
Okay.
The Voice of the Moving Sidewalk article. Did you know about that?
No. Oh, do we have the Jack Fox?
Yeah, Leo did a story about the airport renovation and the Voice of the Moving Sidewalk.
I always point out that his voice is actually in a lot of airports.
Yes, right. Well, they did that, but they was renovating our airport. But they did a sidebar. The reporter got interested in us, in other words, and expanded that part of it. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah.
We're walking from the studio area through another corridor that's fairly narrow, only about 6 feet wide, to another part of the building. Now, this building was actually built in parts, so we're going up a bit of a ramp here. The building was first built in 1883, and part of the 1883 building is still here. Larry, have you ever realized that this is original stone over here?
I sure didn't. Wow.
So while we have covered up most of the 1883 building by adding to the front, the back, and the sides, some of the old, now it feels slippery because we painted it this bright green, actually. but these are large pieces of stone, and they're part of the original 1883 building. So where we just came from, the part between the studio and this other part back here, is part of the original building.
Mm.
So we have walked then back toward the factory where tape duplication is. And where we started out down here, we were talking about being in the middle of the building. So we're headed back toward the middle of the building. On my left are a few artifacts from the museum, which were actually too big and heavy to go up to the museum. One of them is our first safe that was made in 1872. And it was built actually before this building. It's made of iron, and
Fantastic artwork.
Yeah, I was going to say, in those days they did very decorative functional things. So it's hand-painted. It's Hall's Safe and Lock Company, and it has peaches and pears and bright yellows and green leaves. It says Louisville and Cincinnati, and a spray of flowers on the open door of the safe. Now, it was big enough that there's no elevator in this building that could take it up to the museum. And in fact, when they brought it out from its place where it had been stored for many years, they had to take the hinges off the door and take out part of the wall to move it to this display space. So it is of interest because that's where in 1880, I guess, safe was purchased by APH in 1880 for $250. It's where we used to keep our money once upon a time. Over on the left side are some older machines. We were talking about the rotary press that's upstairs that we use for doing magazines and pamphlets. And on the tour, we do kind of take a look at this very old version. Well,
you broke it.
No. I always, because you can't see the rotaries in the plant anymore, and I just raise that up and let the tour people see.
Okay.
This is the press that I said looked like an old-fashioned wringer washing machine, and it pulls a roll of paper through it. And as the paper comes out the other end, it's cut into the size they need for the magazine or pamphlet. We're still using these today, but this particular version is much older. So the rotaries have been useful for a long time. Then down further is a case of type from when we used to do typesetting. Then there's a record press, because we used to make records before we made cassette tapes. And the way the record press works is you had a master record of metal. And then because of the weight of the record press, you could stamp out copies on the vinyl and the plastic of the records. And beside that is a mold for the globe that you'll see later in the museum. It's made in in 1, 2, 3, 4. Should be 6 parts to the globe. They put the mold together, and it's a hollow shell. And this is a mold for the world. So once they put it together, they can pour plastic in it. Then when the plastic hardens, they take the mold off, and they're ready to make another one. So they will mold the parts of the world in fragments, then put them all together to make a total globe. The globe itself is going to be about 2.5-3 feet in diameter. And then it'll be painted. Right now, it's just plain white. But later, it'll have the colors of the earth and the sea painted on there.
So, paint that by hand?
I don't know. We don't make that one anymore.
Oh.
You never see anything about that. They used to make it, and today we make a much smaller globe, and we don't make the globe anyway. We stamp plastic over it in educational aids. It never had Braille on it. It was just the topography, so you could see the mountains and such, and you'll see that in the museum.
Wasn't it like 3 feet
yeah.
diameter
mm-hmm.
or something?
Yeah. Well, that's the mold for it. And many people say they when they come on tours, if they went to a school for the blind, they'll always say, we had one of those at our school.
Yeah.
I suspect we don't need to make it anymore because the ones we made are all still there. We're going to open 2 double doors and go into tape duplication. The tape in the area where we were a while ago, the studio area, we mentioned that the narrator reads, makes the recording, and I'm not sure if I said that once the recording has been finished, it goes through several levels of quality control. So the narrator and monitor are working to make sure there are no mistakes in the recording. But once they're finished, someone different, a proofer, will go through it and make sure it matches the book exactly. If it's a National Library Service tape, we have to send them a copy as well. And it must match the word, the text, the content, but also be technically as perfect as we can get it. So once it's approved, with all those things being just right, it's a master tape, and that's what we use to make our duplicates. Now, it's not in the form of a tape at this point. It's in the form of a CD, but it is the master from which duplicates are made. If it's something like Newsweek or Reader's Digest, which we also put on tape, they don't have to go through quite as many levels of proofing because it has to get out in a more timely manner. National Library Service work may take several weeks to several months to get finished, but Newsweek has to go out once a week. The room we're going to look into over here on the side is where they do the actual duplicating. Taking the CD master, they take it into the duplicating room, and they have, perhaps 2 dozen machines that will make duplicates of what's on that original CD. The machines are set up with large reels of recording tape, perhaps 16 inches in diameter each one. And they take the CD and they make many copies on this large reel of recording tape. And a sound tone will be inserted between each copy on the large reel. So they've got copy after copy after copy. So in the duplicating room, they make as many reels as they need because they might need to make several thousand copies of each one of these things. Then the tapes, once they're recorded, will come out into this larger room outside, and they're actually loaded in the cassette because since they've made many copies on one reel of recording tape, the job then is to take them off the large reel and put them in individual cassettes. And across the room in front of me, perhaps 30 feet in front of me, are loading machines. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, about a dozen loading machines. And each of them has on them 2 spools of those recording tapes with 40 cassette-sized copies on each one. On the other side of the machine are empty cassettes. So the job of the loading machine is to wind the recorded material off the large reel and put it into the empty cassette. So it does that in about 11 seconds. The cassette is full. When it notices the sound tone that was inserted between the copies on the reel, the tape that's been loaded will come out the bottom of the machine, be picked up and put into a system where you have labels affixed to the outside of the cassette in Braille and print. And that part of the process is driven by computer. The names on the labels are computerized. It'll come up the line from that labeling and the finished tapes that are loaded and that have the labels on them are stacked in boxes here in front of us. Then if they're National Library Service tapes, they'll go over to the line on the left
and they'll be loaded into green plastic packing cases and made ready to ship out through the National Library Service system. If it's Newsweek or Reader's Digest, those are two magazines you can actually subscribe with us for. They will go over to the other side of the room and be packaged in brown cardboard packing, and individual people's addresses will be put on them, and then we'll ship them off to you. So if you were to subscribe for Newsweek, we would get that material from Newsweek magazine at the beginning of a week, like Monday. They would have finished recording it in the studios by Tuesday at the latest and be ready to duplicate it. They'd be ready to send it off by the middle of the week and ship it off. So people would get it at the same time as it arrives on the newsstand. So that part has to go very quickly. They can make 18,000 to 20,000 cassettes in the room a day. So this part goes quickly. The slow part is getting the good master for the, say, National Library Service tapes. That might take weeks to months. We're going out the back door, and on our left we see a bin with all of hundreds of these National Library Service tapes. Have you seen these, Larry? They just stand around here in these, like wash bins.
Oh, yeah.
This is how they go to the post office.
Hmm.
It's like a big tub that you put your laundry in. It's about 3 feet by probably 4.5 feet, and maybe about 3 feet high, and it's filled with dozens and dozens and dozens of the green plastic cases that the National Library Service has. These will go to the post office this way, and they will sort them out and ship them off to the Library Service that will distribute them through their network for distribution.
So we even put the cardboard in the
right. That's part of the That's part of the assembly. Once they have the label on and they're ready to, they put them in the packing cases. Then there's another part of the line that slips that cardboard in there. And let's see, this particular book plate will probably have been printed on computer, but it could have been printed. Remember in the large print area, they make some of those cards that they insert in slots and certain tapes in the large print area on the offset presses.
Okay.
So we've gone in another loop through this room where they're doing tape duplication and loading, come out two double doors, and we'll be back in the hall where we started and talked about the fact that we were near the shipping department. These tapes, of course, we might mention are, they look like regular recording tapes. There's Mr. Hill, Jimmy Hill.
Well, we have got to get this guy we're doing an audio recording of a tour, Jimmy.
Really?
I'd love for you to introduce yourself. This is probably the nuttiest guy at ATH.
head of security. My name is Jim Hill. I'm over security, housekeeping, and the Braille Slate Department.
Now, we went in the Braille Slate Department. We actually saw the whole tour.
All right.
I mean, we don't do that on a regular tour.
Yeah.
These machines are so...
I've been in there, ever the time I've been here, I've been affiliated with the Braille Slate Department.
And you've been here how long, Jimmy?
42 years.
All right.
43 in August.
And what is it you tell me every day, Jimmy?
Have an APH day.
That's right.
Another day in paradise.
Exactly.
And he means that.
Yes. When it comes time for me to retire, I may retire. If not, bury me here somewhere in the building.
So you can haunt us.
Yeah, there you go. The Slate Department started right here, in fact, on that side of the aisle there.
Uh-huh. Where now there are soft drink machines.
All the way over to where the stairwell is. Back my first stop is right over there on a wire wheel. Wire wheel's over here in the shop now, but it had a wire wheel on there to take the stain off the nickel slates.
Uh-huh.
It had gotten wet or something and got an oxidation on them. And then on this side of the aisle was another punch press and a water fountain, which is still in there. But once that opened up back there, we moved in back there and gave this up to someone else. But been a long time, but had some good times.
And now your primary thing is security and maintenance?
Yes.
I need my neck shaped up.
Yes.
And what does that involve?
Don't bother me.
Well, I help Ronnie with maintenance and then over security and housekeeping. And I'm the postal liaison. And if any questions come up, I'm a go-between the post office and the people here.
And we do a lot with the post office.
Yes.
We have a lot of shipping.
Yes, we do.
Okay, excellent. And just for our
listeners' sake, Jimmy Hill is a really great guy.
Yeah.
He is.
Colonel Hill, that's Agent right. 007, APH CIA.
All right. Well, thank you, Jimmy.
You're welcome. Have a good one.
You too. Yeah. Have an APH day.
You too. Have a weekend.
Absolutely.
That's right, APH sure. weekend. When we talk about the cassette tapes, of course, I'm sure many people who are listening do use them and know that they are four-track cassettes. So they look like regular tapes, everybody that sees them, but then you have to realize they have four sides.
Unless they run half the speed of a regular tape.
Right.
So you get eight times the material.
So you don't have to have as many individual cassettes if you have a long book. And it's kind of copyright protection for the publishers in a way, too, because they can only be played on special tape players. The publishers are, after all, making other tapes to sell at retail market for the rest of us, and this controls who uses them. Only the people with the special cassette players, which you can get on free indefinite loan from the library service, or if you want to own a more special one, you can get one from us, but they will only, these tapes will only play on the special tape players. So we're walking back toward the front of the building now, having seen the basement. And talked about pretty much everything in it toward the part of the original building. So Larry, with that, this is what we do in the factory. In fact, we've done more than we usually do in the factory.
Well, thank you so much, Roberta. This has been an excellent tour. We had some good response from the first one.
So. Oh, good. You have to email me that URL.
I certainly will.
Hi.
And, well, we'll tell people goodbye from issue 26 of Blind Tool Tech.
Alright.
Larry Skukan here with Roberta Williams.
Goodbye.
APH Tour.
Come by and see us if you're in town.
Please do, yes. And don't forget you can call and leave a comment on our comment line at 206-984-9203. Thank you, and we'll see you next time. Alright.
Okay.